Welcome back, everybody, to the Best Seat at the Track, the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Davey Siegel. We got Daniel McFadden on with us this week to recap what we saw at Richmond and preview Talladega, the behemoth, the granddaddy of them all. Plus, our guest this week, Chris Rice, president of College Racing, Mr. Positivity, as I call him. Excited to chat with him, as always. Let's get this episode started.
Buggity, buggity, buggity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the Front Stretch Podcast this week, and I want to bring in Daniel McFadden to chat about Richmond, which was, as I wrote in my notes, it was a race. And I think that's where we can kind of start. I mean, Alex Bowman, the finish was really good. I was there in person, so yeah. I was able to see it all transpire. Never going to complain about being at the racetrack. I enjoyed that. But what happened to Richmond? It used to be the action track, the excitement track, beating and banging and fisticuffs after the race. But now it just seems like it's a lot of, you know, single file. Maybe you get some side-by-side racing, no cautions whatsoever. What's happened to Richmond?
I don't know. I responded to someone on Twitter at some point, like in the middle of the race, who was complaining about this track used to be called the action track. And I was like, you know what? Track nicknames should have term limits. So the action track has not applied to Richmond Raceway since probably 2008. Even that's stretching it, because like, you know, the spring race that year, the one with Kyle Busch and Dale Earnhardt Jr., yeah. Denny Hamlin like cooked the field. And then
sounds familiar.
He had issues and everything transpired less or less. But I'm like, from the last 10 years, I'm of the mind that like day races at Richmond have been better.
Yep.
This race, I think it was overcast for most of it. So
it probably
played at least some part into it. But no, yeah, like you said, it was a race that was saved by Kevin Harvick backing into the turn one wall with what, 15 to go?
I think the restart was with 15 to go. So I guess Harvick must have spun with like 20, but yeah, he saved the race.
Oh, it did. And Jimmy Johnson had a fast car. Not Jimmy Johnson. Oh, God.
Put a dollar in the swear jar. Wow, that was early.
Jimmy Johnson. Alex Bowman had a fast car the entire race. He was up in the top six or so. And then he got that shot there at the end and took advantage of it and got a win that no one was really expecting. And but yeah, it was a race. It was not a great race by any means.
Let's start with Bowman, though, because he did have a fast car. And I put something out on Twitter, you know, in the final stage that basically said, you know, Hendrick's having an on and off day because Bowman and Byron are in the top 10. But Larson and Chase Elliott are off the pace. And I said that Bowman was by a mile the fastest of the four. And somebody responded, who is a William Byron fan, and was like, by a mile? And I was like, well, Bowman started 24th. He's been in the top five when he didn't have his uncontrolled tire penalty, got sent to the back because of that penalty, then worked his way back to the front, and then he won the damn race, much in part thanks to Greg Ives pumping the tires up. But still, he won the race, and he had a quick car throughout. He stole it at the end, don't get me wrong, but people are saying, you know, oh, he lucked into this win, or, oh, he didn't have the fastest car. No, he didn't have the fastest car all day. But no, he didn't luck into the win. His team was there at the right time when it mattered. The driver executed. So did the pit crew and the crew chief. They earned this win. I want to get that out there because, as you mentioned, Daniel, he did have a very fast car.
Yeah. I mean, did he get lucky that there was a caution? Yeah.
No doubt.
But he started the second row on the restart.
He had to get by inside lane. Yeah.
Yeah, he had to get by Hamlin. Like, there's no way around that except going by him. And he did that convincingly and then ran away. Which I found funny afterwards is that Bowman was surprised by what happened because he said he'd been terrible on the short runs. And he said he looked at his rear view mirror and saw, you know, everyone getting smaller. And he's like, oh my gosh, what is happening? So, it's great when we're surprised by what's happening, but it's even better when the driver themselves is kind of at a loss for words for what's happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he was good. And his first two wins came on tracks that are a mile and a half or what longer, Chicagoland and Autocross. So I don't think anyone was pointing at him being one of the contenders going into that.
Yeah, so I mean, Denny Hamlin dominated most of the race, right? He led over half the race for the second straight week, which is nuts. Martin Truex was up front, had a pit road speeding penalty, and then that fell him back a little bit, but he rebounded for a top five. Joey was up there. He took the lead from Denny right before Harvick spun to bring the caution out. Let's talk about what Denny said after the race. I want to get your thoughts on it. He said that even though he doesn't have a win, he would still rather be where he is in the points and just in general where their team is rather than where Alex Bowman is with five playoff points and a race victory and a playoff spot all but guaranteed. Are you buying what he's selling, or are you kind of a little hesitant to buy that?
I get what he means. I mean, the 11 team's far and away more consistent than the 48.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I get what he means by there, but they haven't won yet. We're 9 races in. He's led the points since the Daytona Road Course. Hasn't won yet. I buy what he's saying. Like, they know what they got.
Yeah.
The 48 team, they only have two or three top fives.
They haven't been as good as Denny. I know that.
No, they don't. So, when I initially heard him say that, I didn't really get it. I didn't buy that. But after a few days, yeah, I get what he means. So, yeah, I totally buy that.
So let's also talk about some drivers that had really good runs and they really, really needed it. First top 10s of the entire season. It's been over 2 months. And Eric Almirola finally gets off the schneid, finishes P6 for Stewart Haas Racing. Really good run for him. Still probably is going to have to win to get into the playoffs. And Matt DiBenedetto as well. First top 10 of the season for him after a lot of bad luck to start the year as well. You think they both still have to probably win to get into the playoffs? I mean, if they put together good runs like this, but as long as more people start winning and they're not one of them, I feel like they're probably still going to have to get a checkered flag.
At this rate, yeah, they do have to win. Like, because this is just one race. That's mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to Richmond again until the fall. You're not going to a short track again for till the summer. So and they haven't been performing. So luckily for Almirola, they're going to Talladega. He has a win there.
Yep.
So DiBenedetto,
He's okay at Talladega. He's not great, but he's not bad.
Yeah, I'd have to look at how he's done there. So I don't know, but he's a Ford. Fords are good at Talladega.
Yeah.
So they got to string some races together. I'm not going to see one attempt. It was ninth place for DiBenedetto, right? Ninth place?
Yeah, top 10.
I'm not going to see one ninth place finish from DiBenedetto and say, "Oh yeah, man, they're right on track." No, you got to do this week to week for me to see. Yeah, now they're on the right track.
Somebody who also was on the right track before getting off track and spinning late was Harvick. On this podcast, every other NASCAR TV radio show column, like everybody's been talking about Kevin Harvick struggles. Stewart Haas Racing struggles for good reason, and I think Kevin would be one of the first to tell you so. But he was running inside the top 10 all day, peaked into the top 5 a little bit, and a flat tire is what sent him spinning into the wall. So no real fault of his own. I mean, he's one of, if not the best in the Cup Series at tire conservation. So one of those freak accidents. I literally saw it happen, and I did a double take because I was like, there's no way that's Kevin Harvick. He never spins by himself. It does not happen. So I think a little bit of the critics were silenced on Sunday because he was running well, but I think it also is worth pointing out that that was a 750 track, and mm-hmm. Stewart Haas and the four teams still have a lot of work to do on the 550 tracks, which is the bread and butter, which is mile and a half and up. Do you agree with that?
I'd say Stewart Haas needs work everywhere. Harvick hasn't led a lap since the Daytona 500.
Yeah.
This is his worst technically his worst year since he joined Stuart Haas.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's a crazy high bar.
Yeah. But it's ridiculous. I mean, but yeah, they need work to work everywhere, but they showed signs of life. So did, you know, Almirola, but, where's Custer? Where's everyone else on that team?
Custer and Briscoe are still learning. Almirola yeah. needs to pick it up. And Harvick, he's leading everybody, but he's still a little bit behind.
Yeah, I mean, no, like, I don't think anyone's going to disagree with the statement that the success of Stuart Haas Racing over the last 3 years, 4 years, was Kevin Harvick's success. Almirola, he gets a Talladega win. You had that year where Clint Bowyer won at Michigan and Martinsville.
I'd go further than that, Daniel. I'd say since he got there, the success of Stuart Haas Racing has been Kevin Harvick. Like, Clint has won races. Kurt's won races. Like, Custer won a race last year. But since 2014, the 14's been the strongest, I think, yeah. by a mile at that stable. And when you look at the results, right? Again, Clint was serviceable. Tony, before he retired, very serviceable. He's Tony Stewart's Hall of Famer. Custer won a race last year. Like, I get all that stuff. When you look at the stats and you get into the minutia, and also just the eye test and, like, seeing the races week to week, he is the leader over there,
yeah.
and especially now getting rid of Bowyer, or Bowyer leaving, however you want to call it. I mean, there's a lot that needs to be learned from the other drivers, even a veteran like Almirola, clearly, who's not performing up to snuff, and he would tell you that too. So Harvick, I would say not just the last 3 years, I'd say the last 6, 7, 8 years, he has been the barometer at SHR.
So, yeah, like I would say, like, outside that, like I said, the year that Bowyer won his two races, when was the last time a Stuart Haas driver that wasn't Kevin Harvick won more than one race?
Good question. Got to research it after.
So, yeah. Yeah, Cole Custer's win was, you know, a last lap pass.
Right.
So I don't, like, you know, Rodney Childress has said that the rules changes, like, they lost 40 pounds of downforce and that screwed them up in yeah. such an incredible way.
Right.
And it's just, it's obvious. So, yeah, like I said, Richmond, signs of life. Let's see what happens if we get to Kansas and it's still the status quo for them. And it's weird to say that's the status quo for Kevin Harvick, but remember, he's 45 now, right? 45.
44, I mean, 45. Yeah, he's the second oldest full-time driver in Cup behind Kurt Busch.
And the schedule changed drastically from last year when he won 9 races.
Mm-hmm.
How many tracks did he win on last year that he were not going to fewer times or not going to?
And it's going to change next year too.
So, yeah, Kevin Harvick was good with the status quo, and now the status quo's drastically changed, and we're seeing at least partially the effects of that.
All right, that's a bow on Richmond. Daniel, stick around. We're going to get a break out of the way. We'll come back. We'll chat with Chris Rice, and then let's talk some Talladega. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This week's stage break is brought to you by, for the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th week in a row. Nobody yet, but I am told that we are working on it because advertising is wide open on the Front Stretch Podcast. If you want to connect your brand with this wonderful brand that we have over here at Front Stretch, myself, Daniel, our other lead reporters and our lead content creators, contact our sales manager, Kevin Deedy. That's DEADYK37@gmail.com. You guys know the email by now. I say it every single episode. You want to attach your brand to us? We want to collaborate with you. Contact Kevin Deedy, DDK37@gmail.com. Let's throw it over to our interview with Colleague Racing President Chris Rice. I call him Mr. Positivity for a reason. He's always smiling. He's always upbeat, providing positivity on social media, in person, to his drivers and his teams. And I really was just genuinely curious about his relationship and, one could say, bromance with AJ Allmendinger. So you'll get that answer and so much more right now. Here's Chris Rice. pleasure to welcome on this week Colic Racing President Chris Rice. I like to call him Mr. Positivity because just look at him. He just makes you smile, honestly. Whenever we talk to him on SiriusXM, whenever we see him on the Fox broadcast, he's always jovial, always happy. How excited are you for this weekend, though, at Talladega? Because it's not every day where you guys have a car in the Cup race and multiple cars in the Xfinity race. It's going to be a busy, busy weekend for you.
You know, it is going to be a busy weekend, but I was just smiling because I'm thinking about, like, these interviews now. I do a lot of podcasts, Zooms, and I think I've had one every day this week. And wow. It's a new way of norm, right? So you look at yourself in a camera, and, man, I couldn't imagine, like, looking at myself 5 years ago when I was 340 pounds. So now I'm happy to see myself. But, no, super excited to get to Talladega, trying to get Martinsville behind us. You know, very, very disheartening weekend for us. But we had to stay positive, figure out what our issues were, and move forward. So ready to get back to Talladega. We made a bunch of changes since Daytona because we didn't feel like we were where we needed to be. And so we made a ton of changes and look to be back at the front with our Xfinity cars, Justin Haley, Jeb Burton, and AJ Allmendinger, but also look to have a better finish with Kaz Grala. You know, we didn't finish at Daytona, so we want to finish the race and have a better finish for him for sure.
Without giving too much away, can you tell us some of the changes that you guys did make, just so we know, like, what to expect?
Yeah, hold on a second. Let me get my paper. No, I'm not going to tell you what we changed.
I got to try.
No, absolutely not. So, but, you know, that's a good try. And I always love that when you say you changed a bunch of stuff. Well, what did you change? Well, we're not going to tell you what we changed. But, yeah, no, just, you know, the thing of it is when you go to a racetrack, and I've been watching a race, and you can't see it, I'm pointing at it, but, like, I've been watching a race from Talladega last year where Justin Haley won the second race there, and we wasn't that good. I didn't realize that until we were watching that race. Really couldn't. The Fords kind of beat us pretty bad, and we, you know, Justin Haley being really, really good at speedways made us look better, and we kind of didn't see the reality. And when we looked at the reality, we wasn't that good. Go to Daytona and it shows up. You know, we had been dominating the speedways and we wasn't. Right. We were, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh right there when we wrecked. And we were all lined up, but we still wasn't going to beat the Fords. It wasn't going to beat, you know, 22-1 by itself. So we had to go to work. We went to work. Everybody in the shop went to work. Everybody at the engine shop went to work. And hopefully it shows up this weekend when we get to Talladega.
I think that speaks volumes, though, because you guys won the race last year at Talladega. You're watching it back, and you're saying, hey, we got work to do. You guys hold yourself to a pretty damn high standard. Is that right? I know it is.
Yeah, we do. You know, we really do, and you have to, right? Like, if you're ever content with what you did, you're not going to continue to grow. You're going to continue to be the same. And when you're the same, the Penske's, the Gibbs, those cats are going to catch up with you. So you got to get better. You know, our road course program has been great since AJ Allmendinger showed up. Well, we hadn't stopped, building. Like, we hadn't stopped trying to be better. We're going to Coda with a total different package than we've ever ran.
Yep.
Just because we got a little bit of practice. We got a little bit of stuff that we can do. We obviously can get back to where we've been and where we've been fast, but we felt like that, even at Daytona Roval, we got wrecked. We had passed the 22, but still, he was too close to us to be able to go and win. You know, you got Justin Haley that yep. We didn't contend for a win with him there. And, you know, Jeb obviously is still learning road course racing, but we want to be better. And the way to be better is continue to work hard and don't think that you're the best you can be. I've always said this. I say this to Matt Colic all the time. The day I walk in here and I know everything, it's the time for me to quit. And I tell it to all our people, you know, we don't know everything. Let's continue to work hard. Got some super smart people in our engineering department that just make us better every day. And sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad.
It's good advice. I should try to take that up as well, because sometimes I think I know everything. And then I realize, I don't know, Jack, you know what, you know?
So you must not be married.
No, I'm not. I'm 24.
Yeah, as soon as you get married, you'll figure it out real quick. You don't know everything.
Well, hopefully my girlfriend's not listening, so that way she can't,
please,
give you too much crap. This season, though, for you, Chris, I mean, it's been a big one for Colic, right? AJ has won already. Kaz and AJ have run in the Cup Series so far. You guys are going to continue that You bring in Jeb into the fold on a full-time basis. I know we're only two and a half months into the year, but overall, are you pleased with how everything's going over there at Colic?
You know, I'm definitely pleased with how we have attacked the first part of the year. I'm a little disappointed in some of the things that we've done that has showed up at the racetrack, and but that's on all of us. I'm disappointed myself for letting it get that far. You know, I'm very pleased at how the 16 car has ran. Very pleased at how Justin Haley has been stupid solid at every single race. Dude's running in top three. If you go back and look at everything, he's running in top three up until right at the end of the race. And that was the thing with Justin Haley. It's his third year. And I'm like, hey, man, you got to get stage points if you want to go win this championship. You can't ride around, you know, 10th to 15th all day and then show up at the end. Dude has done that. We have not done a great job of tuning the car as we went along. So, you know, Alex Shantz, crew chief on that car, and Justin have spent a lot of time together over the off time. And hopefully that they'll see that better when we get to the Darlingtons and the Dovers and those places. So very pleased at where Colic Racing's at. We were a little bit behind on all our cars just because we couldn't get them built fast enough. We're definitely getting caught up. I counted yesterday how many cars we had sitting out there, and Lenny Chandler and everybody at the shop have worked real hard to get us ahead going into the Darlington, Dover, those stretches, because those are some of the racetracks that I feel like we might have a little bit of tough time at. Ross was really good at Darlington last year, but Ross is good there. Our cars have not been that good in the past, so I feel like we got a lot of work to do with, you know, AJ doesn't seem to think he can do real well there. You got Justin that doesn't feel competent there. And I don't know about Jeb. He hadn't been there and I don't know how long. So, you know, I'm definitely happy with it, but I feel like we still are working hard to get all three cars to where they run 1, 2, 3.
There's been a lot of talk lately, Chris, about the future next gen car coming in next year. And Matt Colic, your team owner, he has not been shy on the record of saying, you know, we want to go cup racing. We're dabbling in it this year because we're interested in getting into it full time next year. That's no secret. So how do you manage, you know, trying to put potential plans in place to go cup racing next year, secure the proper equipment, secure the proper infrastructure, while also focusing on the here and the now, which is fighting for an Xfinity championship with not one, not two, but three drivers, and also giving the cup effort your full time attention?
You got to separate it, right? You got to, like, so the weeks that we've been off 3 weeks in a month, and, you know, I haven't taken any time to do anything, and you just got to work hard at making sure that what you're planning is not affecting your memory or anything you're doing every day at the Xfinity shop. And then your cup car has to be totally separate of your Xfinity shop. And you got to let the guys and girls do their job, right? Like, you can't micromanage it. I can't go out there and say, yeah, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? You got to let the crew chief manage it. You got to let your shop foremans and all your engineers, everybody do their job.
Right.
And that's the way you do it. Yeah, we're working hard. We bought another 60,000 square foot shop right below us. Getting ready to start construction on some renovation on that. So we got a guy that's handling that for us. So you just got to let the people do their job, you know. And I think sometimes, you know, growing up, coming through NASCAR, I didn't understand that, you know, and I learned the hard way that you don't need to micromanage people. You need to let them do their job, make sure they're happy at home, and make sure they know they're part of a race team that's continuously growing. You know, Matt Colic is very, very clear with me. Press the gas and win trophies, right? Gas and win trophies. We do that, we'll get sponsorships. And he's right. You know, we didn't win races for a minute. And it looked like there for a minute, man, we couldn't get sponsors. We couldn't do this. Nutrinac Solutions came along. Ross Chastain won our first race. We started gaining sponsors wanting to come. So now we got a sponsorship group. You got to let them do that. So that's the key. Don't micromanage them. Don't tell them what to do. Give them advice. You know, I give our crew chiefs advice all the time, you know, because we have younger crew chiefs. Alex Johnson is second year. Bruce Schlicker in his second year, Jason Trincheri in his first year. So I give them advice, but let them do their job. Let them do the things they need to do. When they make mistakes, make sure they know it's a mistake. But other than that, let them rock.
See, when you're talking about that, it reminds me of when I was chatting with AJ earlier on in the year for this very show, and I asked him, you know, what is so different about Call? Like, why is it so fun? Why is you and Chris Rice's relationship the way that it is? How is it different from your time in the Cup Series with Penske, JTG, all these different things? You know, like, why is it so fun? And I think it goes back to you because, you know, I joked around. I called you Mr. Positivity, but I'm serious. Like, I think that emanates because you are the president of this team. And even though Matt is the head honcho, he calls the shots at the end of the day. You're in there, boots on the ground, working day to day, making sure that everything is in place, making sure everybody's happy. And, like, I'm not trying to blow smoke, but I really feel that that is a differentiating factor for Colic Racing as a whole compared to some other Xfinity teams and even the Cup Series teams that, you know, they've had a lot of success, but it's very business-oriented. It's very, you know, here's what we got to do. This is how we need to succeed. You got to work hard all the time. Work, work, work. Don't worry about your off time. You got to keep working. You have a really good balance, looking from the outside, obviously, of, you know, having your people have success by being happy. It's not necessarily like we have to win to have success and to be happy. Sure, that's what you guys want. That's what you pay them for, obviously. But I don't know. I feel like that's what differentiates Colic Racing as a whole from everybody else in the Xfinity garage. And I guess my question is your positivity and overarching philosophy of, you know, not pushing everybody to the limit, letting them do their thing, not micromanaging in the minutia, does that come natural to you, or is that something that you had to learn?
Well, it does come natural to me. And I definitely believe that in life you can get down, right? Like you can wake up and not feel great and you're down and you can take it out on the people you work around. But like when you're positive every day, even through COVID, you know, I had to figure out how to be positive. And I don't know, but like I go back and look at my stuff and try to figure out how can I help the next person, you know, and that's the key. How can I help these guys be better at home? Because, you know, I mean, dude, I was that guy out there sweeping that floor. I was that guy out there building that shop.
You get it.
I was that guy out there setting that car up. So how can I make those guys be happier at home so they're happier here? Well, their wives watch my social media. They watch everything that I do. And if I'm, you know, if I'm down in the dumps on my social media, like I see some people do, I'm going to quit watching it. So the key to that is exactly like the conversation you and I had. You got to be genuine, right? Like you, when you see my positivity, it comes from my mom and my dad. And you know, it's genuine. It's not something that I just smile. Now I have down days. And one of my good friends that's worked for me for a long time is my fence post, right? Like he is the one that sees my down days.
Yeah.
But like, I don't let that bother what we're doing and what the future looks like. You know, every time I talk to Matt Colic on the phone, it's never negativity. It's always positivity. Right. And that's what you got to do. When you wake up, I woke up this morning and I'm really hard on my diet and my different things right now. I kind of packed on the pounds, stressed in a little bit. So my wife and myself, we work really hard. I woke up this morning tired. And I was like, man, I don't want to get out of bed. You know, I want to call in sick. Like, but I call into myself. But I'm like, no, I got to go for the next guy to make them understand that, hey, I'm here with them. Now, I don't get here at 7 o'clock with them. I work out every day in the morning and I come in and let those guys do that job. But I'm on the phone at midnight probably. But
yeah,
you got to be positive in life. You got to look what the next step is and know that you can be positive. I can always say it this way. Make your glass half full, not half empty, because half empty means that you got no chance to get it full, right? Like make it full, make your glass half full. You got a chance. You're the only one can do this. You're the only one can control your appearance. You're the only one can control your attitude. And you're the only one can control how happy or sad you are. So, and I know people go through moments that they struggle and they need a partner that can make them happy. Dude, and my wife will tell you this, if you ever talk to her, she'll be like, yeah, he comes home sometimes and don't even talk. Like, he just stays in his phone.
Yeah.
But I need that time too, right? So it's just a balance, man. Smile. Make people happy. If you make somebody happy, it makes you happy. And I read this all the time. I read things. If you smile, it's good for your health. And I believe that. I do believe that.
Make me want to run through a brick wall right now, man. God, you're getting me hyped up at 9:45 in the morning. Let's go. Come on now.
You know, my slogan is, after I say something, is make somebody smile today. And I've already made you smile. So when we get ready to get done, I'm going to do an Instagram video with you. And I'm going to say, look, I've already made him smile, because this is me, right? Like, this is me. It's Thursday. I'm doing what I love. Yep. You, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. I'm doing what I love. I have fell into, you know, NASCAR. My dad gave me the opportunity when I was a little bitty kid, and I didn't even know it. He used to rip me apart, making me better. But it made me better right now. And if I could take those days back and enjoy every moment that he told me to do something different, mm-hmm. it would be so much greater. And I heard that, you know, I heard my dad say that about his dad. And I was best friends with my granddad. And I lost him when I was about 11 years old. And I never understood that. I never understood what he meant by that. Well, I'm very fortunate. I still have my mom. I still have my dad. And I've been doing something I love. So if you do something you love, you never work. I don't think I've worked the last 6 years at Kyle Grayson. I don't think I even worked. But I've enjoyed our time here, and we've won 8 trophies, and we're going to continue to win trophies if we continue to push.
Well, let me know how you got that job, because if you're not working and you're getting paid, I want some of that, I must say.
Enjoy what you do. That's all you got to do. Just enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, move on. I spent time where I didn't enjoy something, and it brought me down in the dump so bad. And you know, I was doing it for money. I'm not going to lie. I was doing it for money, and it was the dumbest thing I've ever done. I learned from that. I learned that don't do that. A couple of things that God's going to take care of you if you do what's right. Like, and you, so go do what you love, and you're going to do a better job at it. Don't work job scared. Enjoy your home life. And when you roll up in here, enjoy the people you work with. Make them your buddy. I mean, you're going to work side by side with a guy longer than you sleep with your wife in the bed. It's true. So you might as well enjoy it. You enjoy sleeping like in the bedroom with your wife. So enjoy it.
You're right. I'm so glad people are going to listen to this, because I'm serious. Like, I'm just getting giddy listening to you. People need more positivity in the world and in their lives, especially these times. So I thank you for that perspective. It's valuable.
I've gained so many people just sending me DMs and different things, and, you know, about the positivity and want to, you know, you look at the thing Kyle Grayson did the other day. Who would you like to hang with? And dude, I'm just a simple guy from Cluster Springs, Virginia. And people need positivity. You're right. People need to smile. And dude, yes, let me tell you something. When we had the issue with the 16 car, I wasn't smiling. You know, Jamie Little comes up to me and can talk to me in a minute. And she's like, "You're going to be able to fix it." I said, "Not a chance, but we're going to try." You know what I mean? But we learned from it. We learned of our mistake. So we'll fix it, roll on, and maybe it falling out or it having a problem didn't show how much speed we had. So when we go back in the fall, we're good to go. Look at the positive side of it. Don't look at the negative side.
Glass half full. Glass half full, right?
That's right.
I love it. All right, I got a couple more things. You mentioned your parents. Ryan Preece, a couple weeks ago, he actually suggested that South Boston be added to the Cup schedule. Something tells me you may know somebody over there that may have some pull or something like that. I know you wouldn't be against that happening. I'm not.
No, I would love it. You know, it gives me cold chills to talk about this, you know, because I'm so emotional about it. And my mom doesn't even, I mean, she knows we put her on the deck lid and things like that. But my mom has been, you know, she's ambassador of NASCAR. You know, even through the days that we didn't have seven, eight cars at South Boston, they stuck it out. Nick Adowski, the Adowski family from Pocono, they stuck it out. She done the same thing I did. She done what she loved. She used to drive a bus. She used to drive a school bus to make sure we went to school, my brother and I. And she went and started working at the racetrack. And she was just kind of, you know, if I remember correctly, as, you know, secretary. And then she started becoming GM. And she, you know, she done what she loved.
Yeah.
Do I think it'd ever be a Cup race? I know it's not big enough to be able to get the people that need to be there. You know, I've seen where Indianapolis is going to let 150,000 people into the racetrack for the Indianapolis 500. Mm-hmm. Man, you couldn't get 50,000 in South Boston. And the purse and what we spend is so high, you have to have big, big places to be able to do this. But could, you know, is it availability to do other divisions? Yeah. But you know, we got to get it to where it's economical for the short tracks to be able to do it. But man, what a great racetrack. What a great facility. You know, all the short tracks, I love them. I go to places that are not even NASCAR. I enjoy them. I enjoy seeing all the people that are there that's been in NASCAR back racing. But South Boston Speedway, my mom, I'm glad it's her last year. full-time working. She's still going to help them, but I'm hoping that my mom and dad, you know, buy the place at the beach like I've been pushing them to do, and go hang out at the beach. Go do what they want to do. Just go. Yeah. I'm over there. I don't know if you want to call it state or whatever, and I've told them multiple times when we sold my dad's business that you guys need to go do what you've always wanted to do. So he wants to go down Route 66 or Route 66, whatever you call it. They want to drive down Route 66. I said, you guys are crazy. Fly over it on a helicopter and look at it. Don't drive it. That's dangerous.
Oh, that's so good. I love it. Yeah, and for those that don't know, Chris's mom, Kathy, obviously has worked at South Boston for years. She's, as Chris mentioned, retiring full-time this year, but Fox Sports did a feature on her. It was really well done, so check that out if you haven't already. But I would love a truck race at South Boston. I mean, that would just be great. K&N, when it was K&N East, now it's ARCA East, they race there almost every year. It was a great show. I loved it, so I'd be glad to see that. Couple more things, Chris. Awesome. I have to ask you about your relationship with AJ, because when I asked him about it, a smile came to his face, right? Where did the taking a picture together before every race come from? Was that you, because you want him to always be smiling? Because when he's not smiling, that means that it's not time for him to keep coming in the race car?
That's right. So, you know, when we hired AJ, I don't know, 3 years ago now, he showed up in here and he sat in my office, and, you know, I was honest with him. I said, dude, I used to do TV for NASCAR.com, and I was like, you know, I loved you. I thought you were great at the road courses and this, that, and other, but I thought your mental ability to win races was tough. And I said, I want to be that guy that changes it. And he would look at me, and, you know, AJ has the most talent of a guy that doesn't believe he has that kind of talent that I've ever seen. That dude has some talent, can run at any racetrack, do anything. And I said, hey, you know, let's go race and let's go do good, and you make us better. That was when we hired him. We go to Daytona. He finishes third, pushing Ross Chastain across the start-finish line to win, Justin Haley. We get disqualified for a motor infraction. Wasn't anything to do with collie racing, just an infraction. Get disqualified, and we should have. I mean, it was a piece that fell out that it should have been in there. They didn't tighten it. Okay, so then we go to Watkins Glen. I think it was the following week. It was a week off. Run second to the 22 car. Had a shot to win. Well, that was the first time we ever had a road course racer in our cars. So we had something break that we would have never thought would have broke. Got disqualified again. 2 weeks back to back, dude got good disqualified.
Remember that. Yep.
You know, so as a president, I'm like, okay. So we paid him like he finished third. We paid him like he finished second. We didn't pay him for his last plate. We done what we were supposed to do as a company, because he had nothing to do with it. We go to Mid-Ohio, and we are terrible in practice. I mean, couldn't be worse. And I'm making this story a little bit longer, but it's a good story. So he gets done. We had lost Nick Harrison, great Nick Harrison. We had lost him. And I was doing Justin Haley's car because Justin's young and he needed some comfort and some love. And Justin's top of the board both practices. And AJ's like fifth or sixth. And we're just not that good. Like, both cars are bad, not good at all. So I go up in the trailer Saturday morning. That's a home track for Lee Filter, Matt calling everybody. And I look him. I shut the door. I look at him. He's in there, typical deal, down in the dumps. Like, man, we're going to be terrible. I look at him. I say, hey, bud, we're not ready to win. We can't win. We're not ready to win, but we need you to make us win. Whether it's today, whether it's 10 races down the road, it doesn't matter. It's zero pressure to go win because we can't win. Wherever we finish is because you're five spots better than where the car's at. So I need you to win. I need you to make us better, but it doesn't need to happen today at Mid-Ohio. That changed our relationship like no tomorrow. He understood that I was behind him no matter where he finished, that it wasn't on his shoulders to go out and win. And I do that every day to all our drivers. It's not where they go out and finish. Make us better for when we come back. That's the key. And I do that every week. And when AJ walks on a racetrack, I can tell whether he's in a good mood or a bad mood. So he hates selfies. So I'm like, okay, every week I'm going to do a selfie with you, and I'm going to show you at the end of the year. So we're going to do a slideshow at the Christmas party, how bad he is. Well, Martinsville, he wouldn't even, like, take a selfie. So I had to do some stupid picture I posted the other day where he stand up on like that. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. And it's been great. It's been funny. Yeah. We get 33 races down the road, and we see how his demeanor is, because he takes pressure. Like, we'll be going this weekend. He hates these speedway races. And, you know, I've been talking to him this morning because we both got our final COVID shot on Wednesday. So I've been checking on him, making sure he's good.
Yeah.
And it's like, he'll be that amped up and all talked up about it because you got Dash of Cash we want to get back in. So
That's
where it all come from, that he knows that he's on our team. When a driver comes here, we know it's certain places we are terrible at. And we try to get them to make us better.
Well, Chris, that was amazing. I've heard that story once before, but hearing it again from you, because I've heard it from AJ, but hearing it from you was awesome. Everything in this conversation was awesome. I knew when I was going to have you on that you'd make me smile, which you did early in the morning. It's great to catch up with you always. Appreciate your perspective, your honesty, everything. So I appreciate your time, and good luck this weekend at Talladega. We'll be seeing you down the road soon, my man.
Absolutely. And we got to do a, we're going to do an Instagram video. So if you
don't do it.
So this morning I'm on, I love these podcasts. I don't know why, but these Zoom things, I want to go back inside. And I told him, I was like, hey, we got to make you smile, Dave.
Mr. Positivity, Chris Rice.
Mr. Positivity called me. So look, go out today, look at somebody, make them smile like we did with Dave, and go watch his podcast and listen to his podcast. When's it going to be out?
It's going to be out later today, frontstretch.com.
Frontstretch.com. Go check them out. Smile at someone. It'll make their day, I promise. Happy Thursday. There you go.
Unbelievable. What a way to end it, my man. Thank you.
Have a good day, man. I appreciate you.
White flag is out on the Front Stretch podcast. I'd like to welcome back Daniel McFadden to chat about Talladega this weekend. First, obviously, want to say thank you to Colleague Racing, Carly over there, Chris Rice for his time. Always enjoy spending it with him, so we appreciate all of them for working with us this week. But Daniel, we're on to the biggest, the baddest track of them all, 2.66 miles, tri-oval on an Indian burial ground in the middle of Alabama. Do you get as amped for Talladega as everybody else does?
Oh, wow. How do I phrase this?
That's a no, I think.
It is not 2004 anymore when it comes to my excitement for Talladega.
Okay.
Went back in, like, you know, the mid 2000s and all that, when I was just purely a fan and not a member of the journalism corps. Yeah, I love Talladega. Bring it on. Now I it's a track I love to hate in so many ways.
Are you the same with Daytona?
I actually like Talladega more than Daytona. I like Talladega more because there's more room for drivers to navigate.
Yeah, it's wider.
It's slightly less forgiving. So if you mess up, you could possibly rebound.
Yeah.
Whereas your Daytona, if someone messes up in front of you, you have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
But that's not exactly the case of Talladega. Man, it's hard to really get enjoyment out of a track where it seems like people lose IQ points with 10 laps to go or so. But the track does provide riveting action. It does.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, like, all the fans love it because it provides some of the best action in the sport. Now, is it the most pure racing that you'll see on the schedule? No, but it's some of the most entertaining. So I get amped up for it, but I don't get as amped as some people because I know it's like, you know, I'd rather have Martinsville or Bristol over Talladega for my one race to watch for the rest of my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Talladega is really entertaining. So I'm excited for the weekend, and I know you'll be watching, obviously, even though you might not like the last 10 laps. You're going to be tuned in.
Have you attended a Talladega race in the stands
before? I have, yes.
I have, like, I did back in 2012. When I was still in college.
I did in college senior year because I visited my friend at Alabama. That was in it was either 2017 or 2018. It was the year with no big one and when all four JGR cars stayed at the back of the field the whole race. It was real boring.
Anyway, okay. Mine was 2012. Brad Keselowski won. It was the spring race. It's like, yeah, we're going to Talladega.
Oh, is that when is that when Carl flipped?
No. That was 20.
Oh, you said 2012. My bad.
Yeah, 2012. Yeah, that was 2010 or 09.
That was earlier. Yeah, my bad. Go on.
So, no. Going to Talladega, that was a big deal. It's like, oh, you're making a pilgrimage to Talladega. And it was cool.
Yeah.
But then you realize that you're only seeing like a split second of action. It's like they're here and then they're gone. And then you're waiting. What?
Yeah.
A minute and some change for them to come back around.
Road course of sorts.
Well, yeah. Well, but even then, if you're like in one turn at a road course, you have like a constant stream of cars.
Let's be
coming
honest,
through.
Though. I mean, if you're going to Talladega, you're like, yeah, I went and sat in the grandstands. But if you're going to Talladega, you're going in the infield. You're camping out on the boulevard. You're not there. Your primary objective of going to Talladega and staying in the infield is not to watch NASCAR. Your primary objective is to be at the NASCAR race. There's a difference there. One of my buddies, Christian, he's just loaded up his RV. He got a lot of beer, a lot of chips, a lot of salsa. He calls Talladega his Super Bowl. And he's heading down there with a bunch of buddies. He's been a NASCAR fan forever. And he's not standing in the grandstands. He's camping out in the infield and he's having a party for a few days because that's Talladega. You know what I mean? There's a big difference.
Well, I haven't got to experience that.
Me neither. Let's do it together.
So I'd love to do that, but I'm also going for a race. I want to go see a race.
I do too.
And there'll be that, what, 30 lap, 40 lap segment Sunday where they, oh, great, choo-choo train. Personally, I wish they would shorten restrictor plate races.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Is this a 500
miles, I think. I think it's 500 this weekend, 500 miles.
Yeah, make it kilometers. Let's see what that does.
Yeah. I'd be down for that. I'm down to shorten everything. Shorten the schedule, shorten the races, shorten the season.
Oh, yeah. Except for Daytona 500, Southern 500.
Yeah.
Bristol and Martinsville.
Coke 600?
Oh, yeah. And Coke 600. Yeah. Those tracks off the table. Can't.
Yeah.
Give me 500 laps at Bristol, 500 laps at Martinsville. Maximum possibilities for drama, carnage, whatever.
At least you're not like our very own Mike Neff, who is on the record of saying he thinks every cup race, let me say that one more time, every cup race, regardless of track, should be 500 miles. Miles. He thinks
Did
you should
watch
run 500
it,
miles at Bristol, Martinsville, Dover, Richmond, all these places. He is an absolute lunatic, and I love him to death for it.
Did he watch Atlanta?
Because clearly he wanted to watch more of Atlanta. Yeah. Oh, I know.
When they reduced Pocono from 500 to 400, the races got better. Like
when they reduce races everywhere, Daniel, they get better. Did you see the weeknight races last year at Darlington? Phenomenal. What happened?
Yeah.
They shortened them. Crazy how that happens, right?
The Wednesday Charlotte race was better.
Nuts. All right, let's get back to Talladega, though, because I want to hit on a couple more things for this upcoming weekend. You're probably going to see the typical, I was going to say restrictor plate, but I didn't, tapered spacer aces up front. You'll have Denny up there, Blaney, who's the defending winner of the race, his teammate Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano. They'll be up front. I'm sure Ricky Stenhouse will be leading some laps, maybe causing some wrecks. Who knows?
Oh.
The thing that I want to know from you, though, is we got – what, 9 races so far and 8 different winners, right? Mm. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Eight of those 9 have been winners, first-time winners on that track / track surface. 8 of the 9. Truex at Martinsville is the exception.
Interesting. So could we get another one this weekend, though, and shake up the playoff picture even more?
I think we're going to get a first-time winner for the season. First time on the track itself, I don't know. It is the common misconception. Oh, these races are crapshoots, but they're not. It's like if you're good at these tracks, you're going to be at the front, like you just mentioned. I think if I'm going to pick a first-time winner for the season, Keselowski, that he's probably going to be my pick. If I'm going to pick possibly just a first-time winner on the track, period, can't pick Blaney because he's 1-2 there now.
Nope.
let's see what Christopher Bell can do. Well, maybe.
Right. We'll see. Well, we'll be watching on Sunday. Geico 500 at Talladega, 2 p.m., not 3 p.m. Be sure to tune in. I know we will be.
Checkered flag, here I come. Oh, no!
Checkers flag is out on the Front Stretch Pod this week. As all the listeners know, I do my Davies do's and don'ts, and we've had moos and moants, zoos and zonts. I don't even want to get into the rest of them, but we have another D with us. So Daniel's do's and don'ts will go along with my do's and don'ts as well. All right, I'll kick it off, Daniel. My do for this week is to expect multiple big ones. I'm not going to say we're getting three or four, but you'll have at least two. That's my do. What's yours?
Expect no caution in the final 10 laps.
Wow. That's a bold prediction.
We almost got it at Daytona. We almost did.
But you did it for a reason.
I know. I want a just solid green flag run to the finish at Talladega or Daytona. Either. Give me something thrilling without an explosion.
Yeah.
Just once.
I wouldn't hate it. All right. My don't for this week is to expect a surprise winner. I think you're going to see a familiar face up front. Not to say you won't get a first time winner this year, but I don't think you're going to see another Michael McDowell type win this race. You're going to see one of the tapered spacer aces or maybe a former champion or somebody that perennially runs up front with these races win. What is your don't, Daniel?
Oh, boy.
I told you to come prepared.
Don't expect a second time winner.
Okay, so you think we'll get a first time winner this year?
Yeah, this year.
All right, let's get into some betting. I know you told me pre-show that you're a betting expert. So
I said nothing of the sort.
So here's how it works. I'll run through the odds on William Hill. They're just matchups. So I'm going to say two drivers. You tell me in a word, quickly, first thing comes to your mind, who will finish higher. And I want to say as a disclaimer, I personally don't bet. But if I was, I would not bet on Daytona or Talladega because it's just too unpredictable for me. Okay, here we go. First matchup, Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano. Quick.
Hamlin.
Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch.
Busch.
Brad Keselowski, Kyle Larson.
Keselowski.
Yeah, no doubt. That might be my lock. Chase Elliott or Ryan Blaney?
Tough Blaney.
I go Blaney too. Truex or Almirola?
Almirola.
I would go Almirola too. He's actually the underdog at +100. That is one of my
really?
Picks that I like this week. Yeah, Truex is not a great plate racer, tapered spacer racer.
He hasn't won. I think he's decent.
I think Almirola's sure. better.
Okay.
Moving on. All right. William Byron or Alex Bowman, a Hendrick matchup?
Bowman.
Okay. Ryan Newman or Ricky Stenhouse Jr.?
Newman.
Newman? Really? You think Stenhouse is going to wreck?
No, I just think Newman has consistently over the last 2 years shown that he's been at the end of the race. Almost won the Daytona 500 last year, lost to Blaney at Talladega.
People get caught up, including myself, in the fact that Ricky's a good racer at Talladega because he's won, but sometimes he doesn't always get to the finish. Kurt Busch or Bubba Wallace?
Bubba Wallace.
All right. Led some laps last year. Christopher Bell or Austin Dillon?
Christopher Bell.
Tyler Reddick or Chris Buescher?
Buescher.
All right, and a bonus pick. There's an odds boost on William Hill, +3,000 for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. to win the race. Would you sprinkle some on that? You said you know betting, so I know you obviously know what that pays out. I'm doing the math for you right now, actually. So $5 on that would net you $155.
I would not bet that.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Not worth the $5. Not to me.
Man, I should have. I think Bubba Wallace can win on Sunday.
Behind
I really.
Story.
I know it's not the exact 1 year anniversary of what everything that happened last
year.
Hell
of a story. Hell
but,
of a story.
But
I would not hate that.
His problem is he knows how to get to the front at these tracks. He just can't stay there.
Can't close.
For an extended period of time. Yeah. He doesn't know how to control the field behind him.
If he's got his Toyota teammates behind him, then he'll probably have some better luck. This has been fun, Daniel. Thanks for hopping on with me. I appreciate it. People can also check out your podcast, Dropping the Hammer. Love that show, obviously. So People can follow you on Twitter as well, at Daniel McFadden, and subscribe to that show wherever they get their podcasts, I assume.
Yep. Yeah. Daniel, Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. I co-host that show with my good friend James Crow, who is kind of like a newbie to NASCAR.
I like listening to Crow's perspective on stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I like having him on there because, he's kind of a returning voice, or not voice, but a returning fan.
And now he's coming back into the fold. I like it.
So yeah, if you're like him and you're kind of new-ish back to NASCAR, check it out, get his perspective. But yeah, it's on all the major podcast platforms.
It's been fun, man. And also, at the request of our majority owner, Tom Bowles, check out my TikTok. I recap the race every week. Try to have some fun with that. Try to bring some laughs to people. So check that out. And check out frontstretch.com's YouTube channel as well. We're just Front Stretch on YouTube. We got interviews posted from each week's podcast on there, as well as my personal one, Davey Siegel, on YouTube. So be sure to check that out. But this has been episode 12 of the revamped Front Stretch podcast with Chris Rice as our guest, Daniel McFadden on with us to talk Richmond and Talladega. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and a review. Subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast player of choice. But until next week, when we recap Talladega, we will catch you on the flip side. Stay safe, stay inside, keep wearing that mask, and get vaccinated if you can. Enjoy Talladega.